you for having me here. Actually, my title is a little bit different because I forgot the exact title I submitted to Fields. But the materials are the same. So today I'll talk about this boxes in balls in boxes duality for coalescing ground emotions, and I'll mention its application in measure-valued processes. Here's the outline. So first I will mention that I'll introduce that duality. I'm going to sketch the proof, and I'll talk about a simple application of that. And the second part of the proof of the talk would be more interesting. So I'll be looking at a super process with coalescing with coalescing Browning spatial motion. And we'll use that duality to derive the Laplacian functional of that measure-valued process. And then we'll study some properties of that process using the duality. Then I'm going to mention a connection with the Aretia flow. So first, what is the duality? Here is a simple version of duality. Now, if we have two stochastic processes, and we have function f, then if this equation is satisfied, then we say there's a duality between x and y. So on the left-hand side of this equation, there's the value of x at time t and the value of y at time 0. And on the right-hand side, there is the value of x at time 0 and the value of y at time t. So in a sense, if you have this duality, then we can transform a problem on x into a problem on y, and you hope that would make life easier. It's not always, we might not always find the dual process, but once we have the dual process, it will be useful. And it has been applied successfully in the study of interacting particle systems and the measure-valued processes. So first, so now I'm going to just introduce this coalescing Browning motion by a simulation. And this is a coalescing Browning motion starting from five different locations. So then those particles would evolve independently until two of them meet. And once they meet, they will merge, they will stay together, and they move together according to a Browning motion. So that's what we mean by a system of coalescing Browning motions starting from five different locations. And now I'm going to talk about this duality. So what are we looking at? Now we are interested in the joint distribution of that system of coalescing Browning motion at time t. So to understand this joint distribution, what can you do? You just make a partition of the real line. And we say each interval of the partition is a box. And we treat those coalescing Browning motions as the evolving balls. And then to know the joint distribution, you just need to know which balls would end up in which boxes. Right. But to be more precise, just look at this graph. So we have a coalescing Browning motion starting from x1, x2, x3. And we run them to time t. If you want to know the joint distribution, you just specify a partition on the real line. And so each interval is a box. You want to know where those balls would end up in those boxes. Okay? So now what we are interested in is this kind of the joint distribution of this kind of indicators. So that means the ice ball, it it's located in the jth box at time t. And we want to know the joint distribution of those indicators. Well, we can treat the same problem in another way. So now, we start a coalescing Brownian motion from those y values, and we run this backwards in time. So then this, then those boxes would become random because the evolution of the coalescing Brownian motion. And if you want to know the joint distribution of those y coalescing Brownian motions, what you need to do, you just specify some points on the real line, and then you run this coalescing y coalescing Brownian motion to time t, and you want to know which box would cover which balls. So to know the joint distribution of coalescing Brownian motion, it would be enough to understand the joint distributions of those indicator functions. Okay, so you run the y process and you want to know which box would cover which x value. Okay, so we have two vectors or arrays of indicator random variables. And we'll believe it or not, they have the exact same distribution. And that's what we mean by the self-duality for coalescing Brownian motion. So this part is a joint work with Evans. So we have two vectors of indicator random variables, and then they have exactly same distribution. So to be more precise, here is an example. In this example, we have two balls, and we have on one side we have two boxes on the other side, and then the duality tells us so those two random vectors have the exact same distribution. So now I'll sketch the proof. So there are different ways to prove this result, but a shorter proof would go as follows. So we first try to prove the duality for simple coalescing random walks, and for this. So this, now we consider two simple coalescing random walks, and they live on different state spaces. So one just takes integer values, the other one takes values like this. So it's a shift of integer values. So in this way, those two processes can never take the same value. And now then the following is kind of standard. So what do you do? You consider any function g. Then you plug in this random, you plug in that vector into G, so then it will induce this function x on f on x and y variables. And then you write out the generator for x and y, and you let this generator act on those x variables and the y variables. And you make sure this would be the same. And this is the standard way to show that this duality would hold. Then you take a limit, you do the time space scaling to derive the duality for coalescing Brownian motions. So because now we know those two random vectors have exactly the same distribution, so that gives us a lot of flexibility to derive other kinds of dualities. For example, as an easy exercise, you can recover this this duality for the Volta model from our duality. And now I'm going to just mention a simple application of that duality. Now we call this is the colored partition driven by a coalescing-Brownian motion. So what's going on is, now if you start a coalescing-Brownian motion, then it will determine a random partition of the real line. So then you assign a tab to each interval in the partition, and I call this the color. You assign a color to each interval, and then you want to know how this random partition, colored random partition, evolves. So here is, again, that's what we mean by, which side? This side? That's what we mean by a colored partition. You start with a partition, then you, those boundaries would run according to coalescing-Brownian motion. You assign a color to each interval. And as this coalescing-Brownian motion evolves, so some of the color will be gone. For example, this color will be gone, right? And but those two colors are still left. Now we can obtain a duality for this model. So what do we do? So we want to understand how this color partition evolves. Then what do you do? You just design a function on those indicators. And now you apply that duality, you would get something like this. Well, but this looks a little messier, so I'll explain that duality by another graph. So what is going on here is the following. We have this colored partition driven by a coalescing-Brownian motion, and we are looking at its distribution at time t, at this time. So now you run this coalescing-Brownian motion up to this time, and we want to know the probability of the following event. So that means we fix three locations, and we want to know the probability such that those two locations would be covered by this red color, and that one would be covered by a blue color. The probability of this event by our duality would be the same as the probability of the following event. So that is the event such that now you start a coalescing-Brownian motion from at those three locations, and you run them backwards to time t. Then you want those two particles to end up in this red color intervals, and you want this particle to end up in this blue color intervals. And by that duality, those two events have exactly the same probability. Actually, this kind of model is useful in this called a stacking snow model. Okay, so now we are. We'll go to the next part of my talk. So that is, we try to use that duality to study a measure value process. So let me first describe this model in words. Now what we are looking at, so imagine we have a bunch of particles, and each particle has a mass. And the masses are changing. They are changing according to independent stellar branching processes. And the location, the particles are also moving, and they move according to coalescing Brownian motions. And then we can describe this model using a measure value process. Basically, roughly speaking, you have a discrete random measure, and the support of that measure would be the location of the particles, and the charge of each point would be the mass. And they want to know how this evolves. Well, if you start with a discrete measure, then it's easy to understand, right? But actually, you can start with a continuous measure. You can start with a pile of particles, and see how it evolves. But then you need a little more care. So we have to define this as a limit. And this is, I call this is the particle construction of our model. So say, initially, the initial measure is a probability measure. We just make it a probability measure. And now, what do we do? We first want to find the, so for fixed n, we want to define a measure to approximate our model. And now for fixed n, you take ID samples from Z0, then that samples would be the initial location of those branching Brownian motions. Then you of those coalescing Brownian motions. And now you run a n-dimensional coalescing Brownian motion starting from those initial points. And that determines the location. And then you let this cassette 1, cassette n to be a collection of independent failure branching processes. So it satisfies this kind of equation, a differential equation. And those would determine the mass for each particle. And then for this failure branching process, we can write out this Laplace transform. And there is an important feature for this is that the failure branching processes are additive. So if you have two independent failure branching processes, you add them up, you'll get another failure branching process, and that's crucial for our proof. When we have those locations and we have those masses, then you just pair them up. You pair them together, then you sum them up. Then you have this discrete measure. So you put this mass over this location. You have the discrete measure, and that would approximate our model. Okay, so this is the next theorem is our main result. So it says that now the sequence of random measures would converge, and it has a unique limit which would be determined by the following equation. So what does it mean? So on the right hand side of this equation, you can understand this as the Laplace functional of this Zt. So basically we just integrate a step function against this random measure, then you take the Laplace transform. Or you can understand the left-hand side as the multi-dimensional Laplace transform of the masses of this random measure over disjoint intervals. So in either way, this would determine the distribution of that T. And now the theorem says that the distribution of Zt can be uniquely determined by this dual process Y, which is a coalescing Brownian motion. Okay, so before we go through the proof, I first mentioned that why such a model is interesting. Actually, this model is referred as the super process with coalescing Brownian motions. And it arises as the scaling limit of another process, which is called the super process with dependent spatial motion. And what is this super process with dependent spatial motion? So that's, it's similar to this super Brownian motion. So it's the high density limit of the empirical measure of a branching particle system. But in this branching particle system, the movement of the particles are not independent. They are dependent. So more precisely, so each particle, the movement of each particle would follow this kind of differential equation. So there is an independent part, and there is a dependent part. This W is a white noise. So it's like the particles are living in a random medium. Then if you do a, so that's how we get this SDSM, and if you do the right scaling, it will, we are going to reach the model we just mentioned. Proof. We'll prove the duality. Well, the key in the proof is that the masses and the locations are independent. So then we can use the duality we just derived. And what do? You first fix those masses, and now you just consider this Laplacian functional. Then you can apply the duality to it. Then you take another expectation on those masses, and you, because we know the Laplace transform of it, and the masses are independent, so you would get something like this, and that is for fixed n. Well, then you take a limit, you let this n go to infinity, and by some arguments, you will reach the duality we want. Okay, that's the, so now we know that we can use this dual process to characterize this super coalescing Brownian motion. Now we'll talk about the properties of that. In measure value process, we always use this kind of martingale problem to characterize the measure value process. That's a standard way to do it. Now, what would be the martingale problem for our process? Now, here is the, so now we see our model is the solution to the following martingale problem. So this M is a martingale defined by our, using our model. It's a martingale, and it has quadratic variation as following. And if you are familiar with this measure value process, you will notice that, so the first term corresponds to the branching, and the second term corresponds to the coalescing. And here, this delta is the diagonal. So, and also notice that our random measure is a discrete random measure. So this will not, this term will not be equal to zero. So here is the martingale problem for this model. But then there is an interesting phenomenon. So this martingale problem is not unique. Because in measure value process, we almost always get, for almost all the martingale processes, for almost all the martingale problems, the solution would be unique. But this is not unique in our model. And the counterexample is trivial. It's almost trivial. You just have define a process like this, but those two Brownian motions do not interact. They're just independent Brownian motions, and it would satisfy it would solve the Saint Martingale problem. That's the Martingale problem of our measure value process. So now we'll talk about another property of that. Okay, so here we make the Laplace transform of this ZT of the mass of ZT over this disjoint interval. And by that duality, it would be the same as this. And now it's the standard trick. You just let lambda go to infinity, so you would get the next identity. So what does it mean? That means this that T will not charge over this union of disjoint intervals. The probability of that can be expressed in terms of the dual process. So I call this the extinction probability for the measure value process. And so now here is another proposition. Now we are looking at the support of ZT. So we know that ZT would be a discrete measure if T is greater than zero. So looking at the support of it, and now we, in this term, we are looking at the support restricted to this interval A and B, and we want to know how many supporting points, how many points are there, or how many particles are there within this interval. Then you can actually compute the expectation of that. But you can, using the duality, you can derive the expected number of particles over a fixed interval. How much time do I have? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that will be more than enough. So now we'll mention this the connection between the measure value process and the so-called Areta flow. So what is the Areta flow? Areta flow is a way to define this infinite dimensional diffusion. The idea is that now you want to start a coalescing Brownian motion from every single point of a real line. And how do you do that? They define this as a random map. Okay, so basically phi stx, what's the meaning of that? That means at time s you have the particle is at location x, then this map would give us the location of the particle at time t. So you use this map to define this infinite dimensional coalescing Brownian motion, and it will satisfy certain conditions. But the last condition is the most important one. So that means if you fix some point on the real line, then you follow the trace of those points under the map, then what you get is exactly a coalescing Brownian motion. So it means the marginal distribution of the coalescing Areta flow is just a coalescing Brownian motion. So it takes some work to show that this kind of process actually exists. But if you believe it exists, then we can use that as a skeleton to construct a version of our measure value process. So basically what do? Now we want to construct a version of ZT using the Areta flow. What do you do? You just run this Areta flow up to time t. And it's known that the map of this Areta flow, the image of this Areta flow at time t would be would be discrete. Then you fix a configuration of it, of that image, and now you order them, and then you want to assign a mass to each of these x. You fix those points and you assign a mass. And how do you assign the mass? Basically, you just consider the pre-image of that point under the arity flow. And then you find the charge of that zero on that pre-image. And now you run a cellular branching process up to time t. So then you whatever left, you put that mass on that point. Again, I'll show you another slide. So you run this arity flow to time t, you get those kind of images. And now you, for each point, you find this pre-image will be an interval. Then you find the charge of z0 over this interval, and you run a cellular branching process up to time t. So then you put the value of the mass of the cellular branching process at time t to this point. So that mass could be equal to zero. So then what you have would be a realization of that t. But that's intuitively, I think this is not hard to understand, but to prove it, you still have to go through the duality argument. So now we know what this model evolves, how this model evolves. Basically, you start with a possible continuous measure, and as soon as t is greater than zero, you will end up with a discrete measure. So you will end up with a finite number of particles. Each one has a mass, and as time goes on, you will see fewer and fewer particles, but average masses would become bigger and bigger, and eventually all the particles would die out because the total mass would follow a critical branching process. And now we want to know the behavior of this process near extinction. So we want to know the last particle just before it dies. So now t is the time such that the process dies out, and now we know the distribution of t. And now this f would be the location of the last particle right before extinction. And then another result shows that actually we can describe this probability law of f. So f has the same distribution as xt, and here x is just a Brownian motion independent of t, and it's with initial distribution z0. So just run a Brownian motion according to starting with initial distribution z0, you run this up to time t, then you stop it. Then that would give you the probability law of the location of that process right before extinction. And actually this is exactly the same as the behavior, the same behavior for as the is exactly the same as the extinction behavior for super Brownian motion. And this work is due to Trapp. But for our model the proof is quite simple. And here I just go through this proof quickly. So now you first consider this approximation of that. Then you consider so this ti would be the time such that the ice particle would die out. And then this is the relation between the capital T and those ti's. So then after some manipulation, you know the last place this whole system dies out can be written as that, then you do some computation, you will realize that what we described is true for this kind of discrete approximation of the model. Then you take a limit, then you'll get the result you want.